Hello everyone, my name is Lizega Tandwa and welcome to Beyond Politics, a weekly podcast with today's political minds as we journey into their day-to-day lives in and outside of office. Mr. Maile, thank you for joining us. I think when you think about Gauteng, when you think about Gauteng ANC, particularly this generation, the younger generation. I don't know how young you are because you're 44 years old, so you're not that young. But when you think about the younger generation, Lebogang Maile comes to mind. And it's part and parcel of why we needed to speak to you about your own life and your own experience, both in politics and otherwise. But let's start with Lebo, the child. You are raised in Alex. You go to school, you matriculate, you go to a WITS, if I'm correct. Just tell me about Lebo as a child and his influences during that time when you were growing up.
Thanks for having me. I grew up in a family of political activists. So I was never in exile or jailed for the struggle because I was very young. But I grew up during that period. And I was influenced by the environment at the time. My two brothers were activists. My mother was a unionist. So I know police brutality and harassment. They didn't come to harass or brutalize me, but they were coming looking for my brothers and they will brutalize my mother. So I've experienced that and it has influenced me as I grow up. And of course the environment, as you know, whenever there's a problem, there will be hippos, tear gases, when there's a rallies, the stadium, and people have been mobilized and the Inkatha ANC fights and violence. So there's been a lot around us at that time, and it has obviously shaped me and made me to be conscientized and understand. And that's why very, very early I would have started being conscious, started participating, but that was just the early 90s, and then and then became more and more involved, and then joined the Congress of South African Students, and then became its president, I think in 1995 until I think early 2001, somewhere there. Because when I finished my term, I had just matriculated. And when we were in COSAS, I like making this comparison that we are basically a generation that bridged the gap between that generation of the young lions, the generation of Peter Mokaba, very radical generation, very loyal, very hardworking, committed, highly mobilized, highly political and conscious. And this generation of what we call a generation of economic freedom, that generation of the young lions was, as you know, inspired obviously by previous or generations that came before them, fighting for political freedom, which we attained in 1994. And I think post-1994, we began to say we need to push hard for economic freedom. So in summary, and when you read my book, I go into details in the introductory part.
Never too young to lead.
Never too young to lead, yes. I go into detail. And I also speak about some of the people who played the role in who I am today and helping me to also understand the value of education and ultimately complete my matric, which I passed on the second bite.
I want to talk about your time in Kosas, and let's talk about the people that influenced you, because part of what you did while you were at Kosas is that you conferred Mamwini with a lifetime presidency. And I remember, if I'm correct, it was Mamwini's funeral when Julius Malema was speaking, and he spoke about the influence of Mamwini to both to the two of you. Perhaps speak about that, your relationship with the stalwart.
Well, I didn't confer her. But I was privileged that when a decision was taken by the National Executive Committee of COSAS to confer her as the honorary president, I was the president of COSAS. And we developed that relationship with her because, as you know, she's the mother of the nation. We could identify with her because of her fearlessness, radical views, and her love for justice, and he was one of the, I'll say, few leaders at the time who listened to us, who understood our plight, if I was to call it that, and who would advise us as well. And in that leadership collective of the Congress of South African Students that I had the privilege and the honor to lead, we came to a conclusion that it would be the right, because we did have a discussion, by the way, whether we should make Mamwini the honorary president and or other people at the time. And we came to a conclusion when we looked at her role during the struggle and how she interfaced with the youth struggles and how she played a role in the conscientization and the mobilization of young people in the 80s in the country, and how she would have worked with ourselves, meaning the structures of young people, whether COSAS, whether the youth congresses at the time. And of course, there would have been people who would have raised other issues and who might not have been comfortable, especially those who were not in COSAS. I think in COSAS we were great at that time. Julius was part of the National Executive Committee. He was the chair at some point, I think secretary of Limpopo. I think the chair, he became secretary of the Youth League later, but the chair of COSAS in Limpopo. So that was a National Executive Committee of COSAS, and there's other people, some of which are still alive, others have passed on, but it was a very solid, radical, sober National Executive Committee of the Congress of South African Students.
You know, when you describe Lebo or Lebogang Maile, I keep saying Lebo, but when you describe Lebogang Maile, there's no way that in that description you don't talk about defiance. And that's part and parcel of Malema as well, Mr. Julius Malema as well. You can't describe him without using that word defiance somewhere there in the sentence. What was the relationship between the two of you? Because I know there was a point where you were supposed to contest each other and you declined at the 11th hour. But what was the relationship between you and Mr. Malema?
You can't associate Mr. Malema with defiance. He's a gentleman. He's a nice guy.
He's a pastor. But with you and Mr. Malema, from the times of COSAS all the way to the Youth League.
No, you also can't associate me with defiance. If I was defiant, I think I would have long been fired from the ANC. I'm not defiant.
Strong-willed.
Strong-willed, I think that's the right. And I think I've got courage. I'm not a coward. And I stand for what I believe in, and I express my views. But I understand that my views must be expressed within the confines of the discipline of the organization. We have always had a very good relationship. We still do, by the way, and we still talk. I mean, the fact that I wanted to contest at some point, and unfortunately we didn't have numbers, and I didn't contest. It doesn't mean that we ever had any bad blood between us. Even today we still talk. We grew up together, literally. It caused us, we fought a lot of battles alongside in COSAS and in the Youth League and even in the ANC. So there are a lot of battles we fought alongside. But there are instances where we will not have seen things in the same way. And we might have had minor differences, but didn't mean that we are enemies. And that's why even today we are still fine.
Is it true that, because I heard when I was, speaking to some people, the one person said in particular, someone who comes from Gauteng said that there was a rumor that you bought Julius Malema his first suit.
I think you must ask him that. I think you must ask him where he got his first suit. What I can tell you is that when he arrived in Gauteng, he was staying at my home. So and I know he would sometimes leave his car. Remember, there's a car he used to drive that I liked very much when he was in the Youth League. It's an Audi Quattro, a train 3.2 or something like that. I just liked how it sounds, and he will sometimes borrow me that car and all that. So we grew up together. We grew up together, but of course, as the times move, and then he's in the EFF, I'm in the ANC, we might not be spending time together very close, but we are like brothers. Let me put it that way. So I would never. I will never pray for his demise, and I'm sure you will never pray for mine.
Does it concern you what's happening around the EFF? And I ask this because, in as much as the EFF is an opponent, but it's healthy for a democracy to have opposition parties, and it's healthy for, I would imagine, for the ANC to have a party such as the EFF, who you have policies and ideologically you are you do have some leanings and you do have share similarities, and to see the EFF disintegrating like this, what do you make of it?
Well, I wouldn't have a view. It's an internal EFF matter. We are different political parties. I want to see a strong ANC that can reclaim its former glory, and that it's entrenched in our communities, that upholds the values and the principles that our forebears have always articulated and what has always inspired us. And I would like to see the ANC winning 51% and above in the 2026, 2029. I know we have to work very hard. It's going to be easy. And I think it will really be unfair to talk about affairs of other political parties, because those are internal matters.
Another person who you have been close to is Bule Mabe. I think at some point Bule would say that, you know, when people turned their backs on him, you were the one person who he could lean on. That relationship, talk about that relationship from the ANC Youth League times, and perhaps react to the current situation that Bule finds himself with the court.
Well, we are still close. He's a friend of mine. And even when it was clear that there were going to be charges. I knew about it, and we spoke about it. I know of the project that is being charged for, and I wouldn't want to speak about what is my view until court processes are done and all that. But I...
being a lawyer yourself, you know that.
I actually believe in his innocence unless proven guilty, not until, unless. So I will want us to give the courts, because I've got confidence in the judiciary of our country, and I think the issues will be ventilated there and they'll be dealt with. And I saw him speaking to the media about some of the issues and the details and all that. So, but he's my friend. I'm not going to disown him. I'm not the kind of person who was disloyal. And when you are in trouble, I run away, I take cover. No, I'm not like that.
Are you a polyglot? I think I heard that you're a polyglot. How many languages do you speak?
How many? I can speak isiZulu, and sometimes people are.
Siya bed is Xhosa sakho kodwa.
No. That's bed is Xhosa sam. We are never going to tell that we did it in. Ukhona ukuphendula. So ndiya khona ukusthethe isXhosa ndisthethe kahle. Kandiya either Eastern Cape, Western Cape, ndithetha namaXhosa sthethe isXhosa nje. And I can still make sense. This is Zulu, it's Xhosa, and Yazama. Okay, Shangan, they're silver and distorted because umama makum Shangan, and then English, Ngobasi, we are forced to see Ted, last Ted, and Abanyabantu. And then all Africans, they're even, and then it's Sotho, Spade, it wasn't the Wumpaid. Normandy Wumpaid was Alexandra. Senior called that fluent speech, but Deva, yeah, I do.
Let's go to Alex. And in 2007, an article comes out, Mail and Guardian. I'm sure you know very well about that article, which says Mashatile and the Alex Mafia. And in that article, it named the deputy president, your brother, Mr. Mike Maile, Mr. Ngenge Kekane, and Mr. Brigman Sithole as the core group of the Alex Mafia. And then later on, it emerged that you were the baby of the Alex Mafia. When you look at how those particular individuals and yourself are viewed by the media and society at large, do you think there are misconceptions about that relationship and those ties?
Fundamentally, they are. Because there is no Alex Mafia. So the people who talk about it and abuse that concept, it's because I'm told, because I was not there, that in exile, there were people from Alex, amongst them Josiah Jele, Alfred Dinzo, Joe Moody's, and others. Because of their influence, and because it happened that geographically they have either lived in Alex or they were, before they left, or they had some relationship with Alex, and then they were called Alex Mafia there. So I think someone who's mischievous started creating an impression that there's Alex Mafia, and the dawn of that mafia is Mashatile. And if you were to look at the time, all these people that are called Alex Mafia, and they were Alex Mafia on the basis that they are influencing government, Gauteng government, and who gets tenders and all that. At the time, only Mashatile was in the provincial executive committee, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe Mr. Kekana. And then my brother was not. He was just working there in government because he was qualified to work there. And then the other person, Mr. Stolle, was in business because he is a South African who deserves to be in business and all that. But what I'm saying is that this was created to just dent their image, but to also create clout and suspicion about the credibility and integrity of Mr. Mashatile in the main. And that's why even today you still have people trying to bring that up.
I actually want to talk about Mr. Mashatile and the scrutiny in the media and what you make of it. There's been a series of articles in certain publications around Mr. Mashatile, which sometimes involve yourself. You've been in trouble with the South African National Editors Forum around your language to
I'm not involved in anything. I had some rude guy, rude chap, which we dealt with, and it was dealt with. But I'm not involved at all. So don't say sometimes when it involves me. But my position on Pulemab is the same on the deputy president. He's like a brother to me. And I will never turn my back on him based on allegations. He has not been charged or anything. And I'm saying, even if he was to be charged tomorrow, I will still believe in his innocence unless proven guilty. And I continue to enjoy a good relationship with him because he's a good man. Mm. And there's no reason to doubt his bona fide. I wouldn't know about all other allegations that are being raised and all that, but as I'm saying, I will continue to believe in his innocence unless proven otherwise.
You hold an LLB from the University of South Africa, and I think you have a bachelor's degree as well.
I have a postgraduate diploma in public management.
A postgraduate diploma. Mm. Tell me about the, because you've kind of pointed towards that, the importance of education. Tell me about the importance of education, as a especially when considering that now you're a father. How important was that for you to ensure that you're educated? And because it's part and parcel of the kind of example that you have to assume when it comes to your kids.
No, you're right. Not just your kids, even society. Because if you lead society, you must demonstrate that you are serious about the responsibility that you are given. And one way of demonstrating is to empower yourself, acquire knowledge, acquire skills, which will equip you to be able to execute the responsibilities that have been bestowed on you. And of course, when you are in a leadership position, it's not for you and your family and your kids. It's a responsibility that should be seen as an honor and a privilege. And that's why you must respect it, and you must give it your all to the best of your abilities. And I know sometimes politicians are not trusted people for a number of reasons, and we have to work hard to win that trust. But I can tell you, a lot of us, we try our level best, the best of our abilities, to give it our all. And that's why education is very important. But it also gives you a different perspective about life. It also helps you to think and be able to interact with people from different backgrounds. And so it's a very important thing to be done, not just by those who are in leadership responsibilities. All of us, we need to strive to acquire knowledge. And of course, it gives you other options. If you are not made an MEC tomorrow, you can go run your law firm. You can be a prosecutor. You can be many other things that are there in the profession. So it's a very important, so that you don't have everyone seeing politics as a matter of life and death in terms of their survival. But people must see politics as an opportunity to serve with integrity and based on principles.
Let's talk about that servitude. One of the things that people will say about the leadership of the ANC, criticize the ANC leadership, is the level of opulence that you exude. When you look at ANC leaders, you'll think about flashy cars, flashy houses, flashy clothes, and so forth. And I want to bring you back to what circulated just before May elections. And it's around, I think it was Edwin Sodi's partner and your partner, which were seen in Monaco in very, illustrious lifestyle. Are you conscious of that, the image that you portray?
I'm not opulent. And that's why you have never seen me wearing any, what are these branded clothes? You don't know where I live. The car I drive is a government car. Mm. And I'm not saying I don't like beautiful things, but I'm not opulent. I'm not flashy. I'm very conscious of the conditions our people live in and all that. And you've got people who live their lives. I mean, I saw the talking about other people, and then they say it's Saudi and whoever, and then they want to put me in there. I don't know, where do I fit? I was not there. And I will never do that.
Your partner is in your extension.
I don't do such things. That's why you'll never see me with the branded clothes and all that, because that's not in my nature. Judge me. It's me who's a public representative. And by the way, I don't promote opulence by any person, whether my kids, my partner, whoever. I don't promote it at all. So, but I'm a public representative. Judge me, and then don't disadvantage, for instance, my kids. Mm. But it doesn't mean they must be opulent. Mm. They don't have a right to. Because when you are in the public office, yes, they must have their life, but they must be conscious of the fact that I'm a public representative, and how they project themselves and they behave will definitely be under public scrutiny. But I'm saying primarily judge me as a public representative, and I have a responsibility to raise their consciousness and all the people associated with me not to do that. We must not do these things because it's a PR exercise. We must do them because indeed it's part of our makeup. It's because it's the principles that we espouse and all that. And that's why I'm saying to you, I will not lie and say I don't like beautiful things. I do, like all of us and all that. But if I love beautiful things, should I go around showing off and putting it in the face of poor people out there? No. We shouldn't do that.
I want to talk about, it's a pity we don't have that much time, but I want to talk about you and Banyaza Lesufi.
Yes.
You contest him for deputy chair in 2018.
Yes.
You lost.
Yes.
You contest him again for chair.
Yes.
You lost.
Yes.
What is that relationship like between the two of you? And perhaps let me go further to ask, is it true that the elders told you don't contest, rather have a unified slate, and you were saying, you were adamant that you needed to contest?
No, I'll come to that, because you see, ANC is a democratic organization, and I'm a very genuine person, and I... If I believe in something, I believe in it. And there was a reason why we contested the 2018 and now and all that. And we don't have regrets, by the way, because, you know, sometimes people think, hey, because it was never about me contesting, winning or not winning. And I'm sure in future we'll talk in detail about those contests and all that. But that's why after the conference, as disciplined members of the ANC, we rallied behind the elected leadership. You will know that those who were contesting and supporting my candidature, a lot of them were elected into the PC and constituted what you
could call
a majority. Yes.
It's called Maile's PC.
No. Okay. The people who don't understand how I'm the child of the ANC. I've been taught ANC ways of doing things. And that's why one of these things we're talking about of opulence and all that, you have never seen me doing that and all that because I'm the child of the ANC. So there were those who were saying, no, I must be premier because we can go to the PC and vote. And indeed, had we voted, I would have been number one. Maybe I would have been premier of this province. But I said, no, that's not the ANC way of doing things. You don't say because you did not win in conference, now you have your chance to
bypass
bypass and do prove a point. Mm. No, we're not contesting to prove a point. We want to strengthen the ANC. So if you want to strengthen the ANC, you can't then do things that will create a problem. Because you can imagine if you have a chairperson of the ANC who is available and who's able to become the premier and you come with something else. We have seen it in other provinces like Free State long time ago. It has created problems. So we can't say we want to build the ANC but do the opposite. That's why I refused. And I said, no, we've got the chair of the ANC and we had to support the chair of the ANC to be the premier. And we work well together because we were not fighting or contesting each other because of fame or because we are on any other thing. It's because ANC is a democratic organization. If you go to a conference, you contest. If you were to be, nominated for this or that position and branches feel that you've got capacity, but you also indeed as a person must feel that as well, that you've got capacity. Mm. So that we have seen people coming into positions and doing, you know, things that embarrasses the ANC and things that also weakens the ANC and ultimately erode our moral standing in society. So if you stand, you must be prepared to understand that to lead the ANC is a very difficult task, especially if you are to be the chair. You'll be under scrutiny all the times. You'll be under pressure, and there will be an expectation that you must be perfect. So I understood. And you need to have clarity, of course, of thought. And I understood that it won't be easy. And especially because there are conservative people who believe that, no, you are still young. You must wait until you are 50 or 60 and all that. But we also wanted to undermine that conservatism. Mm. Who said you can't have an ANC chairperson who's 30 years today? There's nothing wrong with that if that person is there. And they are, a lot of the ANC leaders led when they were very young. And they did very well because they were guided by those who came before them, those who were older than them. But most importantly, they were conscious. They were obsessed with accumulating knowledge, and they also had an appreciation of the magnitude of the task. You ought to have the appreciation, and don't think that it's about status. When you are elected, you want to be called leadership, you want to be called chair and all that, but you are not providing that leadership. Providing leadership is not easy, it's very difficult, and it requires you to be very agile as well.
I want to, before I start, because I have questions about ANC Gauteng in terms of your position as the head of elections. But before that, I want to get your take on what happened in the GNU 100 days of celebration, where, if you remember, the Secretary General of the ANC said that he was in charge of the ANC, him and Nomvula Mokonyane. And then the president came back to say, no, in fact, you are not in charge. It is the ANC that is in charge. Just your take on the Secretary General, your relationship with the Secretary General is the ANC in Gauteng, because there's been a lot of speculation around that relationship.
I don't know why there is such a speculation, and it could be that some of the activities that are in the public arena might be interpreted the way they are, depending on where you come from.
And letters that come from Lutuli House.
But those letters have never been distributed through the media. Mm. So if there are people who... because Lutuli House can't have a difficulty of communicating with ANC members. It's actually ill discipline for ANC members to leak whatever communication that's there between them and the Lutuli House. So that's why I don't want to venture into speculation and all that. The Secretary General of the ANC, like all other officials of the ANC in the top seven, are the leaders of the ANC. They have been elected in conference of the ANC. You don't have to like them. If you don't like them, there are processes in the ANC. You've got 5 years, you wait until that 5 years. They can either defeat you or come back, whatever. There are people who didn't want Comrade Gwede Mandashe to be the national chair. Remember, he even makes a joke about it, Bendita and the boy, the boyile. And you must accept, you might have not wanted him, Utanga boy, but he's a national chair of the ANC now. He must be accorded that respect. One of the problems is this thing of people doing things as if ANC is a stock fan. ANC is a political organization. And if you don't like how the ANC is run and you don't like the principles and policies of the ANC, you must leave the ANC. So you can't say, including if you don't like its leadership, you must leave. Well, not liking it, it's something else. But if you don't want to be subjected to its authority, you don't have to like it. But you must know that that is a... the authority, and that's how the ANC is run. And the ANC, it's guided by principles of democratic centralism. And the democratic centralism principles says that there will be consultation, there will be transparency. But once a decision has been made by an upper structure, that decision binds lower structures. That's why there's no issue between the ANC Gauteng and any of the national leaders of the ANC, because there is not even one decision that ANC Gauteng has defied the national leadership on. So on what basis will there be an issue between ANC Gauteng and the Secretary General of the ANC? There is no basis.
I want your opinion on Banyaza Lesufi's popularity. You're the head of elections. I heard a rumor a while back before the elections that one of your research found that Banyaza was more popular than the president here in Gauteng. Maybe that's wrong, or maybe that's true.
Yeah, that's propaganda. There's no such a thing.
Okay.
Yeah, people who were lying to Comrade Banyaza. He knows our research. He knows he's not popular than the president. You have seen there's a research that was talking about the three most popular people. Mm. There's no Panyaza there. There's the president.
I want to ask you about his popularity in terms of the ANC. Does it bode well for him to be this popular individual? And I think you would say that he's more popular than the ANC here in Gauteng.
No.
He's not.
No, he's not. He's not. I think he also knows that it's not possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let's go to a Twitter post that you, and you know that Twitter post where you said, and we all know that you were referring to Colin Malaji because he had made comments I think a day before you posted on Twitter that the sugar daddies send their boyfriends to insult us because they are cowards. I dare them to show their faces. Who are the sugar daddies?
No, that story has passed. You might want to revive it just to add some flavor into this story. Because you think this story is going to die without some controversy. You said to me, I must come here. And, you know, I did this reluctantly because this is not me. Mm. But you said, hey, I want to talk to you, you know, about yourself and all that. So leave the stories about the Twitter, let's say Twitter wars. Those are Twitter battles.
Okay.
They are fought on the Twitter streets. You know, it's very rough there. Yeah, it's very rough. So if you venture into those ones,
why, Lebo, did you choose to support Mr. Zweli Mkhize in 2022? What was the...
Even those ones, we've went past the ANC conference. But you'll remember that just in passing, Gauteng, we said we support the president. Mm. Then we've got two candidates, Comrade Paul and Comrade Nomvula. So the people, in short, were supporting the president, were at the center of that campaign. It was clear that they just didn't want any of our candidates. Mm. So when you go to a conference, you interact with each other as structures, whether regions, provinces, or in any other form, and you discuss. And when you don't find each other, you take this or that position and all that. So, but you'll have people who'll hold that against you and who'll think you must be punished after conference. Those are the things that kills the ANC. So I can't be punished or have regrets for holding this or that position in a conference of the ANC. If you're going to say, no, these people held this or that position, and therefore let's make sure that we take them out of the ANC, people are leaving. They go to other parties and all those things and all that. You must not do that. It kills the ANC. So that's why I'm saying, for me, it's water under the bridge. Mm. I don't have to explain myself to anyone why I supported this or that person, because I've not joined any individual. I'm not beholden to any individual. I'm not loyal to any individual. I'm loyal to the ANC.
Let's talk about the elections, the May 2029 elections, as it pertains to your responsibilities as the head of elections. Some have said that part and parcel of the reasons why Gauteng lost these elections is because there were no structures, there was no campaign. When you reflect on some of the blunders which were made during that time, do you think that there's a responsibility that lies in your feet?
If there was no campaign, I mean, what was Comrade Tokyo Sokwali doing? What was Comrade Khalema doing? Comrade Thabo Mbeki doing? The president, the national officials, wherever they were going, if there was no campaign, how is that possible? It's not possible. It's just that people who are very simplistic and sometimes you are lazy to think, would not want to have an appreciation of the material conditions we find ourselves in. Because you have to analyze the material conditions we find ourselves in and then make a determination of why we've performed the way we are. If you don't live in South Africa, unless, as I've said, you are stupid, you are lazy to think, you'll say such things. There was load shedding, as you know, and the impact that it had, the level of poverty, the unemployment, there are a lot of issues that were beyond us, that it doesn't matter what we have done. Those issues were stubborn, they were difficult. It was always going to be difficult for us. And that's why we did everything we did. We had the research. If we did not have an election, we would not have even researched. We would be sitting in our houses, drinking alcohol and enjoying with our families. We did not even have that privilege because we're so much under pressure. The research we had told us that we will lose. The research, not us. We knew before elections, and it gave us certain percentages, even lower than what we got at some point. And that's why we had to do what we did. We had to come with a transformer program because there was load shedding. Eskom was not coming to the party. And apart from load shedding, people were saying, okay, we see there's load shedding. We understand the problems and all that. But we've been here for 2 years without a transformer, without electricity. That's a function of a municipality. But we took it upon ourselves to respond and deal with these issues. We had to look at how do we respond to the economic issues, unemployment and all that. How do we respond to poverty and a whole range of issues, all the programs we did. And then people would want to say, and that's why you are saying Panyaza is popular, this and all. He's the face of the ANC, the face of government. He's not the ANC. And it's the ANC that was saying, let's do all these things. ANC is not run by individuals. An individual. It's run by a collective. Of course, collective is made by individuals and all that. So we have tried our best. And I think it could have been worse, by the way. Those who are saying, dissolve these people, they've done nothing. What can you do if you don't have the power to do anything? With the power that we had was to do what we did to the best of our abilities. Our conscience is clear. We have done the best we could. We went to raise money. It was difficult to do all many other things. And I can tell you, I don't think there's anything we didn't do that we had to do.
Now, before we end off, because I have one last question, but before I go to that question, I wanted to ask you about your time in government, but I know that
it's fine.
You are one of the longest serving MECs. And I want you to reflect on your time from being the sports MEC to now that you're the finance MEC. What are some of the achievements and some of the, when you think about your time in government and you reflect on it and you think, this is what I did to change, to bring about change?
Look, as much as I don't like talking about myself, but at some point, even if you represent the organization and all that, there's you, the person. And I think the first thing I appreciate is having been given an opportunity by the ANC at a very young age to be in the executive. And I think one of the things that one has been able to learn was bringing about stability in all the departments I've been in. In sports, by the time I think we left, we would have built about 12 libraries, would have built the first ever archive center in the province, which in terms of the constitution, it was supposed to have been built by 1994. And we will not want to look at how we even changed, how we interacted with the sport federations, the teams. If you go into archives, you would have seen we went to visit the teams and how we started supporting them when they won the trophies. They came, how we honored those who won the medals in the different competitions and all that. How we revolutionized and the sports awards, for instance, at the time. If you look at that time, so there's quite a few things we would have done and all that. And then when we went to economic development at the time, there's so much, and we beg there. We are happy that we are now continuing with the things. You look at the township economy, the work we did. At the time, I went at least to 106 townships talking about township economy. Out of that, we crafted the township economy strategy, which had about 7 pillars, I remember. And that strategy gave birth to what we know when we know now as the Township Economy Development Act. And I think that was big. We at the time dealt with the had to develop the economic strategy of the province. We had to look at how the economy department, the economic development department, and the provincial government interact with the private sector. And we had something called FEM to FEM. Mm-hmm. We've revived it now, going to the FEMs and interacting with the business there and all that. And then we had agriculture as well there, how we supported the farmers at the time, and making sure that there's at least a specific number. And I remember we were even saying 50. I don't know how far they ended up. That you must put in a program, be able to monitor it over a period of time. And then by the time I left, we had started with that program, which was a commercialization program. Look at how we revolutionized what is called the EIAs, the environmental impact assessments. When I got there, it used to take government about, 180 days or so to approve an application. By the time I left, we're approving it in 3 months. Mm. We can go on and all that. So all I'm saying is we have not been on a holiday and just sitting enjoying the packs, because that's what some people think we are there for. And they think when you say we must be removed, we will defend and fight and all that. No, we're not there for that. We're doing the work, and we can show the work we've done. I mean, in the human settlement, by the time we left, we had created 70,000, it's 70 years, about more than 70,000 housing opportunities, more than 100,000 stands that we've given in the term that we were there for 5 years. When we got to to human settlement, the department had a disclaimer with adverse finding. The department have got accruals, meaning owing people about 900 million. As I speak to you now, the accrual is 15 million from 900 million. their audit outcome now is unqualified when we got them with the disclaimer. We can go on and on. They've been losing money year in, year out, not being able to spend. You check now. So we are, when we got to infrastructure development, there were a number of challenges that were systematic. And as a result, you had the Department of Health and Education saying, we are no longer going to use you as our client, because they were using them as a client to implement their projects. They were saying, we are no longer going to, because you are taking time, but also it's costly for you to do. Just to give you two examples, so that I don't bore you on with a lot of government things. When we left, there's a project that we implemented on time and within budget. It's a project to roll out solars in the hospitals. That project was about 300 million or so. We did it on time, within budget. Previously, that department would not have done that. Mm. The project could have escalated to 1 billion or so, because we've put systems in place. And when we left, we've got a panel of contractors to be able to build. And by the time we left, we had already appointed about 11 contractors to build 11 schools. Mm. As we speak, they've started with that. We have been busy sorting out the occupational health and safety issue of the provincial government, again, through a panel to appoint people who will manage offices and all that. So there's a lot of things we can go in detail. And perhaps when we are older and we're writing our memoirs, we'll reflect on some of these things, including our experiences of leadership, of how people behaved and performed, and a whole range of things. So being in government, it's not a status thing. It's a huge responsibility. And that's why you can see I'm gray, because it's not, and I'm not even 60.
One last question before I ask you to describe people. It's around Alex. You know, as Black people, we know that success is measured by Ikai.
Yes.
I'm sure that there are times where you'll take your kids to Alex, and it's still densely populated. Yes. It's still, you can still see poverty lines, the divisions when you look at Alex. Do you think that the government, the ANC government, has done enough for that particular community? And what do you say to your kids when you show them that this is where you grew up?
Well, they know where I grew up, and they've been to Alex, and they go to Alex. The ANC has done a lot, but not enough. For someone who has not grown up in Alex, they'll say they've done nothing.
Mm.
And I always point out there are a lot of things that were not there. Firstly, when we grew up, the streets were not tarred in Alex. Secondly, there's a road called London Road. It was not as wide as it is now. Okay. There's a school called Wabegilanga. That school was started at the old Roma church. If you go at Second Avenue, there's still old Roma church. It's still as is when that school was started. That school is new. It's one of the only schools, I think, that has got a huge sport facility with the running track and everything. It was built by the ANC, led government. There's a school called Skien, where I went. My primary school, where I attended, it used to be at Third Avenue. It's now at the Tsutsumani. The school is completely, it was new. So there's a lot of things I can take you. I mean, there's an area called Tsutsumani, a village. There's an area called, Far West Bank, Far East Bank, River Park. All those are new, meaning post-94 developments and interventions by the ANC. There's flats at 6th Avenue that are new. There's and a whole range I can go. So that's why when I'm saying ANC has done a lot, but not enough.
Mm.
Because the Alex issues are systematic. You have a lot of people, if you don't deal with the illegal immigration, and you don't deal with the economic development in other provinces and all that, people come to Gauteng, not just to Alex. And that's why Alex is overpopulated. And what we have done, at least when I was in human settlement, before I left, so that people must not say, but you were in human settlement, what did you do? One of the things we've done, firstly, was to identify land, which has been identified. Land, it's, I think, the Edenvale area. And there's another land parcel, which has long been identified. But there's not been a resolution until recently. It was in Frankenwald. And I think there are other many land parcels. Because what do you need to do in Alex? You need to depopulate it, meaning you must take people out. But by the way, there are areas, because that effort has been made, there are areas like Deep Sloot, Ivory Park to some extent, Bramfisher, which were born off Alex as part of depopulation. So as you depopulate, people have been... So this this misconception that ANC has not done anything, it's not true. There's so much that has been done in Alex, but it's just not enough. Because you've got, for some reason, people love Alex and they go to Alex, they stay there, they live there. And because it's a beautiful place to be at. So we have to do drastic things. I agree with you. But to drive the narrative that, and by the way, those things were done, a lot of them during the Alexander Renewal Project, where people say there was money stolen.
The notorious.
Exactly. And that's why the public protector investigated. He didn't find anything, unfortunately. And that's why I like platforms like this one, because I'm able to tell the story in detail. And you can follow up as well. And there is no filtering of the information and all that. Because then there was lies told. You know, there were lies told that there was a lot of money and that money was stolen. Nothing has happened. And what I've given you, the information of all this, is just but some of the many things that were done there in Alexander.
Now, Mr. Maile, we are almost done, but I need you to, I'm going to name a couple of people and I need you to describe them in three words. Mr. Paul Mashatile.
Humble gentleman and maybe honest.
Mr. Julius Malema.
Radical, honest, because you know his views on any issue. And I said radical.
Mm-hmm.
Is honest. How else do I describe him? I think radical.
Radical times three.
Yeah.
Miss Nomvula Mokonyan.
Iron lady. Very energetic. She's radical as well. Yeah.
Mr. Panyaza Lesufi.
Very energetic and maverick. And the good guy.
Mr. T.K. Nginza.
Very energetic. Always wants to do the best. Trying every time to be perfect. And very loving.
Mr. Lebohang Maile.
Humble. And simple and just does what has to be done.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.